In retrospect, it seems a bit seedy, but back in 1995, I was one of tens of millions tuning in as often as I could to the daily live coverage of the O.J. Simpson double murder trial. Every evening at 6 o'clock came a daily wrap of events hosted by none other than Geraldo Rivera, who was guaranteed to milk all new developments to maximum dramatic effect. One thing you could say for Geraldo, he knew his stuff, and he did not hesitate to let his viewers know that his was the authoritative show on the Simpson case. If featuring a daily array of expert panelists versed on every aspect of the case was a good criteria, then it probably was the authoritative source. Knowing that we junkies hung on his every word, Geraldo would, for the duration of the trial, interject his personal certainty that all trails therein would lead to a hung jury. Those jurors predisposed to hero worship and conspiracy theories would never give in to those who couldn't look past the apparent weight of evidence against Simpson. Then, on the evening before the verdict, owing to Lord knows what, Geraldo notified all of us, imagined, I'm sure, to be panting like dogs at his feet. No, folks, O.J. would certainly be found guilty. Well, we all know that the jury found him not guilty, which many of us still equate to stating that the sun really doesn't rise in the east. Still, Geraldo, you thought you knew it all. And when it came down to brass tacks, you didn't have a clue. And then there's something else relating to certainty that you may have heard about a few months back. A group of 64 professional musicians took a most unusual test. They were violinists, all 64 of whom maintained the sound of a vintage Stradivarius violin was superior to that of any modern instrument. After being blindfolded and playing both the original and Brand X long enough to render an opinion on each, the winner was Stradivarius, but let me qualify that. The winner was Stradivarius if victory consists only of having a bigger number in your column. The outcome of the blindfold test was that 33 voted for Stradivarius and 31 voted for Brand X. Haven't you and I both been there? We proclaim ourselves as having an expert's grasp, and it turns out to be like grasping a flying fish at Pike Place Market. Unfortunately, our certainties get attached to even more important things than Stradivarius violins. To be sure, being certain of certain selected things provides a protective cocoon through adolescence and maybe a bit beyond, and that's certainly not all bad. But when life gets only increasingly complicated, feeling certain, or at least overly certain, puts us frequently on less than solid ground. The old saying about death and taxes has really never been improved upon. Have you noticed, like me, that there seems to be some old karma that materializes in the wake of so many of our proclamations of certainty? I mean, say something is probably true 50 times over, fine. But say, as I have, that something is certain, and how many times are we going to be proven wrong? Let alone how many times are we going to be proven wrong before we stop proclaiming much of anything except death and taxes to be certain. There are different kinds of false certainty. Geraldo's was more of the egotistical variety, the kind where we're convinced that on certain topics of expertise, our opinions are so valuable that they just need to be out there for the sake of a better humanity. Psychological certainty would arise more from a need to cling to something we're afraid not to be true. For example, if you're invested, as was I for some time, in a system of religious doctrine, why cause yourself mental duress by questioning it? A common psychological angle from which many belief systems are derived is the need to feel that we are right. The certainty of being right in such an uncertain world can, after all, provide a sense of empowerment we don't have to question as long as it's our opiate. My friends, I admit to having lived some 30 years in an ignorant bias against Unitarian Universalism, because I was afraid you might be onto something that I couldn't effectively question. Prejudicial certainty is where we convince ourselves that who and what we like cannot help be the best, like the Stradivarius. I love Sinatra, so I'll bore you to death with arguments as to why his was the greatest of all voices. The Caribbean sandwich at Paseo's is better than any you can put up against it, and I don't need one taste of your competitor to sway the certainty of my judgment. In the interest of clarity, let us separate certainty from the realm of what is clearly known. Sure, it is certain that Washington lies north of Oregon, but who's going to waste their time trumpeting their certainty over it? We're instead talking of subject matters open to differing, plausible interpretations. Let us agree that certainty should not be wasted on what most logical people already feel to be true. But let us also agree that it shall not be wasted on the totally speculative, where its value is moot. By now, you may be wondering, what is the ultimate importance of this topic? Oh, yeah? If our working title is Liberation from Certainty, just what is it that's so threatening that we need to be liberated from? I'll be glad to provide the following case studies drawn from my own experience. I've embellished a couple of them just a bit so you can better sink your teeth into the issue at hand. I have hired a couple of applicants of a particular ethnicity for my business. They both end up using sick leave after witnesses spot them drinking into the wee hours. Certainty creeps in over the wisdom of no longer considering applicants of that ethnicity. What I need to be liberated from is unnecessarily categorizing a certain people. Next, I have a high-sodium diet, but my blood pressure is considered to be within manageable levels by my doctor. I lean towards certainty that I can continue my mass consumption of anchovies and sea salt and vinegar chips. What I need to be liberated from is a mindset born of self-indulgence, that when a time bomb can't be heard ticking, there is no time bomb. Next, every electrician or tax accountant or insurance agent or veterinarian I've ever used has been male. And I've been, for the most part, satisfied with services rendered. I fall victim to a particular myopia and dismiss any notion of employing women for any of those services. What I need to be liberated from is a certainty born of comfort and habit that revising my frames of reference is a risk. Finally, I tend to ride a high horse, thinking that I have some kind of crystal ball into the future. I predicted to friends that the Mariners would be in a World Series long before now, that weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq, that an upswing in alcohol abuse would result from the selling of hard liquor at Safeway. What I need to be liberated from is trying to become the second coming of Geraldo Rivera. But being only human, I'll no doubt continue to carry some of my stranger leanings towards certainty. I offer a pocket philosophy on how to deal with the certainty conundrum. Don't relinquish the soundest of your leanings, but don't be controlled by them to the point of silliness. Let us talk about the value of shaking our dependence upon certainty. And granted, if you disagree with my notion that we should welcome any opportunity to expand our horizons of experience and enlightenment, I will fail in dissuading you from holding on to the certainties that most limit your particular horizons. And that's just fine. That's just fine. After all, the wonderful thing about Unitarian Universalism is that I can stand here spouting something, and any number of you can privately wonder, what is he talking about? And your UU ground is no less firm than mine. Now, from my personal perspective, the greatest gift this church has given me is a conviction that the search for truth and meaning is limitless. I therefore tend to regard certainty as the enemy. I would have laughed at that notion in my early days as a Christian, longer ago than I'd care to admit. I was proud of how I'd progressed from my confused days of adolescence and early adulthood. I'd found the way of Christ and felt certain over how to best model his example on a daily basis. I would have denied it at the time, but the supposedly humble path of my new calling actually fed my ego. After wandering aimlessly all my life, I felt specially entitled to try selling my theology to everyone who crossed my path, under the guise, of course, of trying to save the world. I thought, all in, intending to never turn back. But what if our worldview is never more than a product of who we are at a particular time, beholden to the oft-time shallowness of youthful or elder idealism? Is to explore another new direction in another stage of life a compromising of our values? Or is it a product of reassessment, of stepping back to look at the big picture of things from a different vantage point? Does time just beat us down in a way that leads us to surrender core principles for the sake of convenience? Or do we in fact ripen over time, realizing fruit can be harvested on more than one choice vine? There are no right or wrong answers to such ruminations. I merely think it worthwhile to recognize how we can so easily lapse into life-lasting modes of perception that equate the concepts of right and wrong with the concepts of a righteous we and unrighteous they. Such a mindset can only stultify the spirit of adventure. If there were never to be an occasional aha moment, however momentarily humbling, something along the line of, oh, now I understand what she's always been trying to tell me. If we never, at the very least, embrace some new revelation and deepen our grasp of alternative views, how do we promote or nurture harmony in families, in neighborhoods, in communities, between nations? Please allow me to share what led me to choose the topic of liberation from certainty. Now, I've been in many churches of different stripes, and by now wouldn't be a UU if there was anything here that I felt made me compromise my basic value system. Let me be clear, I do feel certain about the overarching importance of select, timeless principles, a couple of which I'll allude to in just a moment. I'm here because I feel very good about this church being a good fit for the application of those timeless principles. But just as Islam isn't superior to Christianity or vice versa, and Judaism isn't superior to Hinduism or vice versa, Unitarian Universalism isn't superior to, you fill in the blank. We must not confuse what fuels our passions as individuals or as a faith community with what is indisputably right through a universal lens. I've found, hardly to my surprise, that you and I, as people who love our church, are subject to crossing that line of interpretation. The reference in our church's fifth principle to the application of the democratic process in society at large would alone represent anathema to millions of people who may even subscribe to a good part of what we claim to stand for. What drives me to choose the topic before us is to offer a small, well-intended influence toward the end of promoting excellence and not superiority. What we do here and in the world, let's do as best we can without regard to whether our way might be better than that of any select them. I remember a while back during Joys and Sorrows when one of our congregants talked of a visit with family members who were politically polar opposites of she and her husband. The gist of what she shared, as I recall, is that visit became an enlightening lesson of how not to read people by their beliefs, but by their hearts. That really spoke to me, as I have a need to recognize commonality when I'm fixated on differences. Is it perhaps not necessarily true that if someone doesn't agree with my governing value system, that he's a sleazeball? Yes, I've experienced tongue lashings from conservative Facebook friends. If I respond to them in the same spirit of dismissal, I'm losing something. I'm losing sight of the fact that it's a more noble venture to seek to understand than to seek to be understood. Stephen Covey said it in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. If we expend more energy in understanding than in seeking to be understood, we will far more often than not discover something that broadens and enriches our insight into humanity. And since those discoveries help us to better serve our fellow humans, what can be wrong about broadening that insight? Let me reiterate, there are of course certain fundamental building blocks of a life philosophy that we should never abdicate, of which we can even be certain. I refer to concepts of timeless and tested application. I'm aware that we can rightfully say, of this I am certain, that all men and women were created to be equal. Of this I am certain, that we should be faithful stewards of our environment. Don't mistake me, please, for equating all certainty with smugness. Still, stereotypical views are stubbornly insidious. I've dug in my heels a good many times, certain that standing by principle was four parts courage to one part stubbornness. Little have I known that it may have been more like four parts convenience to one part conviction. A couple of months back, many of us missed what many of you experienced at CBEC. Likewise, those at CBEC missed a thought-provoking service that was centered on the concept of aha or eureka moments. I took two thoughts away from that service that continue to reverberate. First, spontaneous revelations can cast attractiveness upon pathways we had up until then resisted exploring. Second, as life-altering as those revelations can be, it's a mistake to set them in stone instead of receiving them as launch points to even deeper insights. I had long prided myself, way out of proportion, as one who can hold my own in a philosophical argument. Pat phrases would be employed over and over, my showstoppers for all seasons. Some of them are even the product of aha moments. But at some point, we all discover what I did. If we only choose to drop our facade of certainty, what we'll discover is that there's always a further circumstance that will add another angle of intrigue to our previously pat equation. And more angles will be sure to follow as our life adventures breed an endless series of life discoveries and life transformations. Certainty is, then, above all, a party pooper. The more entrenched it becomes, the more resistant we are to aha moments on top of aha moments. My friends, I'm beginning to think that my greatest certainty is this, that with each new dislodging of certainty, we truly expand the breadth of our human experience.